Hello, I'm Ted Bird. This is number 0544, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0544. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet John S. Couch, author of The Art of Creative Rebellion.
It's very easy, you know, to kind of get into a routine of just like, you know, getting up, drinking coffee, going to work, waiting till the clock ticks, you know, 5 o'clock, and getting back into the car and going home. So I kind of wrote it as a letters to a young poet for designers, but it kind of turned into more of a kitchen confidential for executives. Kind of the back behind the scenes experiences I had making a living as a creative leader, both independently and also within a corporate environment.
Dale Patterson is the author of the trivia book, Close But No Cigar. What kind of close calls will you find in this book?
This was on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1876. A man named Elijah Gray walked into the U.S. Patent Office in Washington. He had invented the telephone. He had a caveat to basically a model for the telephone. But to his dismay, someone had gotten there 2 hours earlier, and his name was Alexander Graham Bell. So by 2 hours, he literally missed out on being the father of the telephone.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And apparently he has some competition from a rather unlikely source.
One of the perks of working for the city, which I think is a stupid one, is a lot of the city officials get company cars, so to speak, city cars, which is ridiculous. I can't understand why they can't ride on the subway to go someplace, but they have a car. Now they turned out that there's some of them abusing it. They have a company car, a city car, and when they're not using it on city business, they're using it to be an Uber.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0544, was Ted Bird, the morning man at the Jewel FM 106.7 right here in Montreal. Thank you very much, Ted, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A man in Sandy, Utah, mistakenly assumed his local 24-hour fitness was open 24 hours. Dan Hill went to the gym late on January 11th and finished his session with laps in the pool after midnight. When he emerged, he realized everyone was gone and the doors were locked. "Doesn't the name suggest that they stay open 24 hours?" Hill complained on Facebook. He called his wife, who suggested he find a comfortable place to sleep. Instead, he called police, dispatch, and the guy pauses for like 10 seconds and says, "You're where?" Hill added. He explained that he didn't want to risk tripping the alarm system and get busted for breaking and entering, so police responded and freed Hill from his unexpected prison. A manager from the gym apologized in a statement and said, "We made the decision recently to close selected clubs in the overnight hours. We clearly did not do a good job of our closing procedures for this club on a Saturday night." You know, this is a story that I can relate to. When I did the overnight show for 20 years, I would go to the gym after the show, which means I was showing up at around 2:30 in the morning. I loved working out at that time. But near the end of the run of that show, I moved to a new neighborhood and I switched to another gym, which was also touted as 24 hours. But even though all their signage heralded their hours, they failed to explain to new customers like me that they closed overnight on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Now, this made no sense to me since I like to go to the gym 3 times a week, but never 2 days in a row. So not being able to go on the weekends was definitely putting a crimp in my style. When I complained, they just shrugged their shoulders. When they shrugged their shoulders, I remembered screaming at them for my refund. Then I apologized for my stupidity and not understanding that when all their signs said open 24 hours, nowhere did it say in a row. Yeah, perhaps I'm still a bit ticked at that. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? A man in Mexico seeking to have sex sought treatment for an erection that lasted 3 days after he ingested a drug used to stimulate bulls for insemination. The unidentified man who bought the drug used by farmers for cattle breeding purposes checked himself into a hospital in Reynosa at the U.S.-Mexico border, where he underwent an operation to alleviate the erection. The man told doctors he took the Viagra for bulls because he planned to have a successful sexual encounter with a 30-year-old woman. There is no word if the surgery was a success. There is also no word on whether or not that 30-year-old woman is still interested. You know, for some reason, I can't get Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass's The Lonely Bull out of my head. Do you hear it too? Perhaps if it's still playing in my subconscious after 3 days, I should seek medical attention. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, during the Tokyo Olympics this summer, athletes will sleep on beds made of cardboard, a nod toward sustainability in keeping with Tokyo's commitment to a green Olympics, which all sounded admirable until Australian basketball player Andrew Bogut pointed out a potential problem. He said, "Great gesture! Until the athletes finish their events and the thousands of condoms handed out all over the village are put to use." In response, Airweave, the manufacturer of the beds, said the beds will hold up to 440 pounds and have been through rigorous stress tests. As long as they stick to just two people in the bed, they should be strong enough to support the load, the company said. Just two to a bed, huh? I guess that rules out the synchronized swimming team getting frisky. And wouldn't two of the Olympic weightlifters be close to tipping the weight threshold? Yeah. Oh, speaking of synchronized swimming, I've always wanted to know, if one of the girls drowns, do they all have to? Inquiring minds want to know. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? John S. Couch is a creative leader, designer, and artist whose career has taken him from Wired Magazine to CBS to Hulu, where he is currently Vice President of Product Design. John is also the author of The Art of Creative Rebellion, How to Champion Creativity, Change Culture, and Save Your Soul. John joins us via Skype from Santa Monica, California. Hi, John.
Hi, Peter. Nice to be here.
Thanks for being on the program with us. About your book, I want to start off right with the title, The Art of Creative Rebellion. What exactly do you mean by that? And who were you thinking of when you were writing this book?
I'll answer that in reverse order. So I guess, you know, a couple of years ago, I was at this conference called South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, and I gave a speech around the launch of a new design. And the working title was "I Hate Your Effing Design," which came from a post on Reddit. And I realized that a lot of designers kind of go through this attack, you know, whenever something new comes into, you know, the launch of their product. So I had someone from Twitter and someone from Instagram next to me as well. And after the conference speech, I was, you know, kind of surrounded by several people who asked, like, do I have any book recommendations? And I said, well, I do, but the kind of book recommendations they were asking for was, how do you continue to stay innovative and creative within corporate environments or even outside of corporate environments. And my wife was there and she goes, John, why don't you just write the book that you would want to give to an upcoming designer or an executive to kind of explain how to maintain creative strength as you go through your day. Because it's very easy, to kind of get into a routine of just like, getting up, drinking coffee, going to work, waiting till the clock ticks, 5 o'clock and getting back into the car and going home. So I kind of wrote it as a letters to a young poet for designers, but it kind of turned into more of a kitchen confidential for executives, kind of the back behind the scenes experiences I had making a living as a creative leader, both independently and also within a corporate environment. So that's how the origin of the book happened. But then, the title kind of came out of the notion that creative rebellion is something that we kind of lose over time. And it's one of my hypotheses that, the majority of things that are really important to you, from like music is really important to you at the age of 15 to about 25, and then you kind of taper off. And then in middle age, you tend to kind of refer back to the time, that music was really, really foundational for you, because it's often associated with really important things in your life. And same thing with literature, same thing with anything. You feel it intensely. And then around 28, you tend to kind of fade off from that and, have an adult job and, get real, and you have a relationship, and you might have get married, have a family. And then you become a series of titles, a job title, a title as husband, wife, partner. And then suddenly you're in your middle age and you're like, what was it I was really interested in doing? And the premise of the book is that you should continue to do the things that spark huge amounts of creative energy for you while you're doing your day job. And so that's where the title, The Art of Creative Rebellion, came from.
Now, you mentioned the difference between the two types of work environments, independence versus corporate. Is there a different mindset in creativity when you're working under those two different groupings?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, entrepreneurs, for example, are by nature creative, and that's why you have serial entrepreneurs. And they often will do something which is disruptive, and then that becomes a company. And then what happens next is the need to stabilize that company so it becomes operational. And that doesn't do well usually for the entrepreneur. So he or she oftentimes gets bought out of their own company, gets pushed out, and they then start another company. And that's why they're serial. And then if you are within a large environment, a corporate environment, you tend to come in, with the idea that I'm going to do, huge revolutionary work. But in reality, companies have a hard time, any company has a hard time with innovation, because you're essentially disrupting the existing model. So the question is, like, how do you maintain, innovation while you're within a large machine, essentially, that has a product that's putting out? And either you're in the machine working in-house, or you're external to the machine, servicing the machine, so to speak. And then how do you do it in a way that doesn't hurt the core business of the company, which can be worth ridiculous amounts of money, but you enhance it? And this has always been an interesting tension between the need to keep things operationally efficient and stable while at the same time disrupting yourself. And I think the most successful companies are those that are like 80%, maintaining stability, so to speak, of their core business, while they have a group or, an ethos within a company of actually trying to figure out how to disrupt themselves, and those two things are hard to balance. And so those are kind of the issues that I talk about in the book as well.
Well, let's talk about balance and that creativity. I'm going to bring up one particular example, and that is the world of advertising. As I'm sure you're aware, the Emmys and Oscars of advertising are the Clio Awards. And sometimes I watch some of these, I see some of these Clio Award winners, and I see commercials that are absolutely stunning and breathtaking and are award winning, but I don't necessarily feel they're doing what they should for the product that they're selling. In other words, they may be chasing awards. On the other side of that coin, you have creative people who have ideas, but the corporation that wants to have the commercial for their product is, for lack of a better term, a bit of a stick in the mud, and they stifle creativity. There's a balance between those two situations I just described, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think, you know, so there's different kinds of design, for example, like that's communication design, that's marketing design and brand design. And what I primarily work in is product design, but I have worked in marketing design as well. And to your point, I think a lot of people who are doing, you know, these Clio award-winning commercials are creative people who are going, I'm going to express myself in a way that's almost a preparatory area for doing a movie, you know, or a TV show. In the same way that MTV back in the day was a breeding ground for, like, you know, David Fincher to cut his teeth with, you know, music videos in order to become a film producer, a film director. I think a lot of people use, you know, license, you know, with certain companies to kind of go to the extreme, and they make beautiful things. But to your point, is it effective in actually helping the company, you know, hit its bottom line? And then on the other hand, you have, you know, to your point, the constrictive culture of a company that is terrified of its brand being besmirched by an out of control director who might do something that could cause huge damage, you know, to the company. You know, what was it recently? The Peloton had that problem, right?
Right, right.
You know, which ironically turned out to help it in a strange way too, you know, because it made it part of the cultural conversation. You know, but it is a balance, because I think that there's, you know, to me, one of the most classic examples of good marketing and advertising was, like, 1997, Apple launched the Think Different campaign. I believe it was 97. And it worked because it was simple. And there was an associative value of the, you know, the idea of, like, Amelia Earhart, you know, or Gandhi, or, you know, or MLK, or, you know, or these brilliant people. And there was just simple black and white photographs and the idea of, you know, grammatically incorrect, think different, you know, and the idea was that you are associating with the company's ethos, you know, their values. And, oh, by the way, they make this product. And I thought that was really cool, because you're becoming part of a company that has a purpose, you know, and you believe in it. In the same way that people have a strong connection to Nike, you know, some of the, to your point, some of the most beautiful, you know, advertising I'd seen was, you know, like, I can't remember who did it, but it was several years ago. Nike had this amazing black and white footage, you know, of this woman running in the rain, and then it just ended with a swoosh. And that was it. And that was both beautiful and effective. You know what I mean? So it's interesting. Like, it kind of, you have to kind of balance what the company's point is and then make design that actually helps to enhance that purpose, in my opinion.
You know, we're almost out of time and there's so much I could ask you, but I will ask one more question. And that is, since we're talking about product, as opposed to what I was initially talking about, which was advertising or creativity from that point of view. When it comes to product, do you think we're in a different headspace than we were? I'm not going back to the industrial age, but to the point where we seem to have forgotten that, you know, for lack of a better term, necessity is the mother of invention, that people are not necessarily creating things to be creative, but to be successful, if I'm...
Oh, yeah. I think that most people go to Silicon Valley in order to, you know, be successful. And, you know, it's a common complaint that there's different kinds of innovation within Silicon Valley. There's, you know, the kind of innovation like Elon Musk is trying to do by going to Mars, you know, or, you know, electric cars, or, you know, really trying to transform things, you know, on a huge paradigm. And then there's the idea of making an application that just simply takes your attention. You know, the kind of thing is parodied in the HBO series, you know, Silicon Valley. And I do think, you know, there's a question like, what kind of value are you putting out in the world whenever you do something, you know, and there's the value of simply just filling time for human beings. But, you know, for me, ethically, the most important thing in life is time, you know, because you can become wealthy and you can, you know, be active in whatever you're doing, but no matter how much money you're making, what you're doing is you're trading your existence, you know, for value. And I always think in terms of, like, you know, when I'm doing something, what is my hourly value as a human being more than I'm thinking about what's my hourly, you know, rate I'm charging someone, so to speak. And so, you know, in a very roundabout way, probably not directly answering your question, I do think that, you know, you have to think, you know, when you're making an app, is this something which is actually going to enhance humanity on some level, or is it actually going to diminish it? And that's just my personal take on it. Everybody can do whatever they want. It's free world. But at the same time, whenever I embark on anything, I try to think, am I adding something that's positive to the world, or am I, you know, doing something which is just a distraction? And so for me, you know, the art of creative rebellion is really a gift. It's actually something that I'm not using it as a way to drive business towards something else that I'm doing. It's simply, I want to give this to people to, in a lot of ways, just alleviate suffering, you know, and to help enhance life. So I hope that answers your question in a roundabout way.
Absolutely. And it's a fascinating topic. Again, I could go on forever on this. The book is The Art of Creative Rebellion. John, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much, Peter.
John S. Couch, author of The Art of Creative Rebellion, How to Champion Creativity, Change Culture, and Save Your Soul. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0544, and you'll find links to John's site and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of Close But No Cigar and Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. On Christmas Eve, a man in Bradenton, Florida, woke up to find an intruder in his room. It wasn't Santa Claus. The victim was awakened by a man sucking on his toes. According to the Manatee County Sheriff's Office, the victim demanded to know what the man was doing, and the suspect simply responded he was, quote, here to suck on toes. Okay. In the ensuing fight, deputies said the suspect claimed to have a gun, but the victim managed to force him out of the home, where the thwarted toe sucker smashed a window in the home and destroyed the windshield of the victim's car before leaving. Officers were unable to locate the suspect using a canine, so they took DNA samples from the man's toes, and the incident is still under investigation. Wow, first this poor guy is awakened by someone sucking on his toes. Then he has the police DNA swabbing off said toes. I sure hope this guy doesn't have ticklish feet. In Mexico City, on any given day, 22 of the 467 escalators at subway stations are broken down. And on January 14th, Metro authorities published a list of causes, including corrosion due to urine, among the top five. Fermin Ramirez, assistant manager for rails and facilities, said he's concluded that riders urinate on the escalators in off-peak hours or at lightly used stations, even though it seems hard to believe. When we open up escalators for maintenance, there is always urine, Ramirez noted. Twitter users pushed back, noting that there are no restroom facilities in most metro stations. The Mexico City subway provides 1.6 billion rides per year. That's the eighth largest in the world by some measures. Wow. The eighth largest in rides worldwide, but no washroom facilities. That would piss people off, if they could. A man accidentally shot himself in the leg while trying to flee with a puppy he had stolen from its owner. The 20-year-old man from Brampton, Ontario, has been charged with robbery and firearm-related offenses. Peel Regional Police said that on December 20th, the dog's owner arranged a meeting with the man to sell a 9-week-old purebred American bulldog through an online site for buying and selling. Once at the agreed meeting place, the owner handed the puppy named Tarzan to the suspect. Police said the suspect then refused to pay, pointing a gun at the owner, and proceeded to run away. As the suspect fled with the puppy, he accidentally shot himself in the leg, causing him to fall to the ground. He was arrested, given medical attention, and taken to hospital. His injuries are not life-threatening. A Colt 45 firearm was recovered in the area, and the puppy was returned to its owner unharmed. Shooting himself while trying to steal a puppy. Welcome to the first Karma Award winner for 2020. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a driver in Halifax, West Yorkshire, England, caused an enormous bang, according to witnesses on December 14th, when he lit a cigarette in his closed car after spraying air freshener. Nearby buildings shook from the impact, and the car's windshield was blown out, along with windows of nearby businesses. Surprisingly, the driver sustained only minor injuries. West Yorkshire police said the situation could have been worse and implored people to open their windows when using aerosol cans and open flames. Well, in this case, it was only air freshener and smoking, but it's the kind of story that makes you wonder. For instance, I wonder why more smoking teenagers who use copious amounts of Axe body spray don't spontaneously combust more often. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It was about 7 years ago that we had Dale Patterson on the show. At the time, he was spreading the word about his book called 15 Minutes of Fame, History's One-Hit Wonders. Well, Dale spent 35 years as an editor and reporter for the Canadian Press and Broadcast News. Well, he's back with another book. This one is called Close But No Cigar, Runner-Ups, Nearly Were's, and Also-Rans. To talk about his latest tome, Dale joins us via Skype from Toronto. Hi, Dale.
Hello there, Peter. I'm so happy to be on your show again. This book, Close But No Cigar, is a book that I've always wanted to write. It's my third book, but it's really the book I wanted to write. I've had it in my mind since I was a teenager, actually.
I remember when we spoke last time, we spoke off air, and you mentioned this book, and at the time I mentioned that I was trying to put together a book that was a similar book to the one that you've now put out, so you definitely beat me to it because I never got around to finishing that book. So congratulations.
Oh, that's okay. It was an idea that I've had, I said, for a long time, and I did a lot of research, but it sort of this all fell into place. Now, the book is about many things. It's about science. It's about space, politics, sports, entertainment, television, potpourri, you name it. And if I may give an example.
Please.
I'll start with this. It's one of my favorite ones. This was on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1876. And a man named Elijah Gray walked into the U.S. Patent Office in Washington. He had invented the telephone. He had a caveat to basically a model for the telephone. But to his dismay, someone had gotten there 2 hours earlier, and his name was Alexander Graham Bell. So by 2 hours, he literally missed out on being the father of the telephone. It would have been Ma Gray instead of Ma Bell.
Now, you said that this was a book that you wanted to write from the very beginning for a very long time. What was it about this particular topic that inspired you from way back? And what took you so long to get it to the public?
Well, the first, I had other ideas. Like I had a book called What Time of Day Was That? And that was in 2001, and it was the time. It's pinpointing the time of day events took place in history, like 12:30 for the Kennedy assassination, and 2:20 a.m. for the Titanic. And there were 1,000 times in that book with write-ups on each one. So I got that idea I also wanted to do that one too, right? So that's the one that just happened to be the first, right? And then for the second book, 50 Minutes of Fame, we had discussed this. I discussed this with my editor when the other book was being produced, and we just went with that. Plus, it sounds kind of funny, but I kind of want to warm up with a couple of books before I tackle this one, and it worked out.
Would you say because you wanted to warm up because this one was a deeper dive as far as research was concerned in putting this book together?
I wanted to do a trilogy on so-called trivia books. So first was the Time book, and then 15 Minutes of Fame, which was, I didn't even have to sell it. My editor said, let's do it. Close with No Cigar, I had to sell it to them a bit, but they finally went along, and I'm very glad they did, because now I have a trilogy, and I'm very proud of these books.
Now, you mentioned Elijah Gray as one of your favorites. Do you have any other favorites that are in the book? And also...
Oh, yes, yes, many. We could sit here all day.
Okay.
Another one...
Yes.
Okay, this was the spring of 1941. It was May 1941, and the British Conservatives were looking for a new leader to replace Neville Chamberlain, who had fallen into... he wasn't well-liked because he appeased Hitler a few years earlier. Now, of course, Hitler wasn't the enemy at the time. And so they went to the office of a man named Lord Halifax. He was their first choice to become British Conservative leader, and by extension, he would have been the Prime Minister of England during that grim period of the 40s when World War II was ongoing and Britain was seriously threatened. So when they went to his office, and it was a problem. Lord Halifax had gone to the dentist. He wasn't there. And they needed a leader, like, right away. This was urgent. So they went to their second choice. His name was Winston Churchill.
Wow.
I have sports. There's a guy named Jackson Brigman. This guy was a fringe player, to be honest. And he wanted to get his PGA Tour card. And that was his lifelong dream. This was in the 90s. And he went to the PGA Tour qualifying school, which is 6 rounds. And it's a real grind. And he qualified on the number, like the highest possible score. But he qualified on the number. He had his PGA Tour card right in his hand, except for one thing. He had to sign the card correctly. And unfortunately, he signed for us one stroke higher than his actual score was. He didn't check his card as carefully as he should have. Well, he was sitting there celebrating with his family, and a PGA Tour official comes up, and he saw the official come in and said, I don't like the looks of this. And they told him, you didn't qualify. You signed your card wrong. So by that one stroke, a pencil stroke, he missed being on the PGA Tour, and he never made it.
Ouch. Ouch.
Kind of a sad story.
It is a sad story. Now,
again, I got one more.
Again, as I mentioned earlier, I was in the process of writing a book. Mine was going to be called Who Came Second. Never got it finished, but one of the things I found interesting in writing, or at least starting, because I did about 100 pages, in doing the research, once you're going down this rabbit hole, there's certainly... an aha moment. Even though you know what you're looking for, there's something that catches you off guard or surprises you. Did you have that aha moment when you were writing this book?
Oh, yes. I found quite a few that were very interesting. There was a guy, this is an interesting story. There was a guy who in 1995 had won the lottery in New Jersey. He had the ticket, but he left it in his drawer for about exactly a year. And on 11:15 p.m. on the Saturday, the last possible day he could redeem the ticket, his sister just happened to be looking through a drawer and found the ticket. And she checked on the internet, or however you check these things, and she discovered it was a winning ticket. And she told her brother, oh my God, you've got to rush to a convenience store and redeem this. He said, oh, I'll just wait till Monday, Tuesday.
Oh.
It won't matter. Well, it did matter, because when he went on the Tuesday, it was Columbus Day was a Monday. He went on the Tuesday. He walked in, and they said, well, it's the right numbers, but this ticket is worthless. It's a $5 million ticket, by the way.
Oh.
And he has tried for years to get the New Jersey politicians to give him a break and give him the money, but they haven't budged. So can you imagine that? And he had the ticket in hand. All he had to do was go to a convenience store. He had 45 minutes, and he shouldn't have waited a year. But
well,
who knows?
I got to ask, because some of the stories you've just told us, slightly on the depressing side.
Yes, they are.
is there a happy, and we're just about running out of time, is there any happiness or joy that you can share?
Oh, there's much joy.
Okay.
Like, there's one story, Susan Lucci. She,
of course, yes.
She was nominated 18 times for Best Actress in a Daytime Production.
A Daytime Soap, right.
Yeah, and she was nominated 18 times, and she wasn't too happy with that. She kept losing and losing and losing. And then on the 19th try, she won the statuette. And people told her, you know, you're getting famous for finishing second. And this is a good thing because you're getting famous. And it was for the wrong thing, but she finally grew to accept it and even appeared on Saturday Night Live in that sort of role. Like, yeah. People were parading the statue in front of her. Of course, she had never won it at that point. But she did win it finally, and she has it in her collection.
And the one thing that's great about that is she's going down in history, because anytime somebody is nominated for a lot of awards in any award ceremony and never wins, you know, somebody's now known as the Susan Lucci of the Oscars, the Susan Lucci of the Grammys. It goes, her name lives on forever, even though she finally got her Emmy.
Exactly. Sort of in an ironic way, in a twisted way, she's become very famous. She may be the most famous soap opera actress ever. I don't really watch many soaps, but that's a possibility. Yeah. You know?
Well, Dale, congratulations on writing this book. I'm slightly jealous, but congratulations on writing this book.
Go ahead and write your book, and maybe it'll be a bestseller. You never know.
Well, again, my book was Who Came Second, and if I do it, I'll be coming in second.
There you go. Perfect. Perfect angle.
Your book is Close But No Cigar, Runner-Ups, Nearly Words, and Also-Rans. People can also look at your website, which is rockradioscrapbook.com. Dale, I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you very much. And by the way, you can purchase the book at amazon.com, chapters.ca, or reddeerpress.com.
Thank you, Dale.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Dale Patterson, author of Close But No Cigar, Runner-Ups, Nearly Words, and Also-Rans. His website is rockradioscrapbook.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0544, and you'll find links to Dale's site and also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabbie, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And with a brand new year, we still have our same old friend, the Gabby Cabbie from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, I like the way you say same old friend. It's certainly better to be an old friend than the alternative.
Exactly.
So thank you for that compliment.
Well, actually, you know, I wanted to bring something up. The last time we spoke, you had a surgery for your back, and if I'm not mistaken, since we last spoke, you've had another one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in October, November, December, these were good months in my life. I had two spine surgeries. They did one, and they had to remove some stuff that was in the spine and shouldn't have been there, broken pieces and what have you. And then about a month later, I had to go back into the hospital for them to do it too. So as a matter of fact, I said to the surgeon, maybe you should have put a zipper on the wound. But now, thank goodness, you know, it's over and done with. I had to. But I got to tell you something. Two spine surgeries within a few months, it takes a lot out of you, baby. It really does. But now I'm back. And that's the critical word. Back.
Well let me ask you this. Is this something that is a symptom of years of driving a cab?
No, actually, I think for a person who's 300 years old, I'm in wonderful condition. No, it's just we get old and your body starts to fall apart. And the spine, not to get too technical, is held in place by little discs. And they start to crack and spinder and what have you. And it doesn't turn out that it's the back. The way mine started off is I was having a big throbbing pain in my left thigh. So actually, the operation is on the back, but the problem doesn't come from the thigh. It comes from the back.
Wow.
But as a matter of fact, I have on my website, before I forget, I have an interview with a surgeon. What I did prior to him slicing and dicing me, I said, hey, doc, can you do a little interview with me? So he said, sure. So what I did is I brought the tape recorder into the operating room, and while they were preparing and getting me ready for the operation, I interviewed him, asking him what he was going to do about it. And I'm thinking to myself, Peter Anthony Holder would be real proud of me. Because how's that for a caper on radio?
Absolutely. So let's talk about some of the news that people are talking about in your cab. First of all, are you guys going to war?
I hope not. I mean, I don't know. We got, you know, I just think we got the stupidest people that run the United States. I mean, really. And again, we're starting to get involved. I liked Trump's attitude about the drone when they said, how come we didn't start a war when they shot down our drone? He said, it was just an unmanned drone. What are you going to do, start World War III over? And the same thing with whatever antics Iran does or Iraq or anybody does. You can't have world wars where you have thousands and millions of people dying. I mean, you gotta work this stuff out. So I'm glad. I think we're close to going to war, but I don't think we are going to go to war. And one of the interesting aspects of this war business is living in New York City. If you analyze our demographics, we have an awful lot of Jews living here, an awful lot of Muslims living here, a lot of Iraqis living here, a lot of people from Iran. You name it, we got it. I mean, and they're very distinct neighborhoods. If you come down to New York today, I could take you to the Iraqi neighborhood. I could take you to the Iranian neighborhood. And you say to these people, What do you think about what's going on in the Middle East? And you'd say, well, I'm worried about my cousin Mohammed. I'm worried about my cousin this, I'm that, and the other thing. It's a very personal thing in New York because we got all these people, all the foreigners are here already.
Well, as you know,
I'm a real American.
As you know, here between Canada and the United States, we share the longest unprotected border in the entire world. And people cross back and forth each and every day with no trouble. Except this past week or so, it's been a little difficult for some people from the Middle East crossing that border.
Yeah, well, and remember, when you talk about the length of the border, a large part of the border is New York State. Because New York State forgetting about the rest of the United States, has a tremendous long border with Canada. No, but I write that off as an individual kind of thing. I mean, if you're crossing a border, or you're going to the Motor Vehicle Bureau, or you're dealing with some governmental official or something or other, and it turns out that the person happens to be a stinker. I get a certain number of complaints from people who are crossing the Canadian border, but if you examine them, it's not so much the policy of the United States, it's that you just happen to run into the jerk on the border who didn't know how to be polite and not rude. I remember the last time I crossed the Canadian border, which was a number of years ago, it was on a train, and the people that came on the train to kind of walk up and down and check the aisles and everything were really remarkably polite and nice, and it was welcome to Canada, and we're happy to have you come visit us, et cetera, et cetera. I figured, yeah, well, let's see what happens when we go back. Going back now, you had a different set of people because those were Canadians. Let's see what the Americans do. Welcome back to the United States. We hope you had a good chance, good time in Canada. So it was two very pleasant experiences. Well, it was my luck to run into the right guys that day. Unfortunately, if you and I do the crossing of the border today, any border, there's going to be a jerk there who's going to give us a hard time, and I'll give him a hard time, and you and I will end up in jail. So that's the way it works.
Now, I would assume, since people talk about the big news items, not just that take place in your backyard, but globally, while they're in the back of your cab, I would assume some people are also talking about the fact that there's a lot of Australia that is currently burning.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, we also have a large Australian population. I mean, there is a neighborhood in New York City, which kind of adjoins the Greenwich Village area, where there's a lot of Australians. So you can certainly get a lot of opinions. And again, it gets very personal because people have relatives back home. We also get a lot of tourists. I mean, you want to talk about tourists. Going from Canada to the United States is a piece of cake. Can you imagine being a tourist going from Australia to the United States? My back hurts just thinking about it. But it is a very big topic of conversation. And, of course, in this day and age where everything's on television, everybody has an iPhone, we're seeing the pictures of what's going on and the things you're hearing about the animals being wiped out and all the other things. I mean, there was a story yesterday I noticed. They were talking about how planes were dropping food to animals that had been caught in certain areas, which I thought is a great statement for mankind. You always see the planes dropping water, but to think that they're sending out planes with food for the animals, that's a pretty sweet thing to do. So everybody here is very worried about it. And of course, there's a lot of fundraisers and what have you. So I would say, in order of importance, at least the conversations, the number one is the impeachment, because we're going to live with that for the rest of our lives. The number two would be the Middle East problem, and certainly number three would be Australia. That's what people are chatting about.
Well, let's talk about some of your competitors out there in the world. I understand that there's a story in New York City that deals with some people who drive Ubers, but they're using city-owned vehicles?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely insane. I say to anybody, if you have a car in New York, you've got to have a very good reason, and you're just plain stupid. I mean, we have really one of the finest public transportation systems there is. There isn't a place in New York City that I can't get to by subway and bus. I absolutely, positively do not need a car. So if you have a car, you've got to have a pretty good reason. And yet there's a lot of people who want to have cars. So we got a lot of traffic. And one of the perks of working for the city, which I think is a stupid one, is a lot of the city officials get company cars, so to speak, city cars, which is ridiculous. I can't know why they, I can't understand why they can't drive on this, ride on the subway to go someplace, but they have a car. Now they turned out that there's some of them abusing it. They have a company car, a city car, and when they're not using it on city business, they're using it to be an Uber. Which, and remember, Uber's just a brand name. I'm not picking on them particularly.
Right.
Well, here they're in a city car, which they shouldn't have in the first place. And to add insult to injury, in their downtime, since they're not marked with any kind of city identification, the guy's using it to pick up fares. You know, you come into New York City, you don't need an Uber. You don't need a yellow cab. You don't need anything except a subway and a bus. And I know that may surprise you to hear me say that, but that's the reality. I never ceases to amaze me how wonderful our public transportation system is.
Well, one of the things, and this is very quickly because we're just about wrapping up here, one of the things I saw on your website at Gabby.com, You talk about the items that are in the news and that people are talking about on your streets. But one of the things that caught my eye was the fact that there are no more elevator operators.
No, there isn't. I mean, when was the last time you were in a building that had an elevator operator?
I was a child.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like one of those things in life. You suddenly look up and you say, wait, there's no more this or there's no more that and everything. And so there was there's a very dwindling union. That's usually your first indication that is kind of going out of business, because if you don't have elevator operators, then you certainly don't have an elevator operator union. My earliest recollection is I remember one Christmas time when I was a high school kid, I worked at Macy's. And at that time, it had the ladies with the white gloves and the elevator going up, underwear, second floor, socks, third floor, what have you. Well, they sure don't have it now. It's all self-service. So for those of you who know how to operate an elevator, and you got to remember, Peter, you know, operating an elevator does have its ups and downs. Couldn't resist.
You know, I saw a television documentary years and years, actually it was a news feature, years and years ago, like maybe 20, 25 years ago now. And there was a statistic that somebody had put out, a city surveyor. It was actually in Chicago, not New York, that I found very, very interesting. They said that if every city in Chicago would return to having an elevator operator, three things would happen. People would be more friendly with each other, crime would grow down, and it would create 50,000 jobs.
And it's nice. I mean,
yes.
It's always nice. It was good.
Yeah.
And, you know, they talk about, as an aside to all of this, they talk about how the online business is killing the bricks and mortar business. Well, a large part of that is gone are the days when you went into a store and you were dealing with the owner of the store or the grandfather of the owner of the store. And they had an elevator operator, and it was a certain personal thing. Now you don't have that, so what the heck? I'll buy something. I'll go online. Why do I need to go to Macy's? Macy's, by the way, and I give this as a free advertisement on your show. If you said to me you only had time to go to one store in New York City while you were here on a trip, I'd say make sure you go to Macy's. And they didn't pay me to say that either.
Well, Peter, we're glad that you're up and about as usual. We're glad that, unlike elevator operators, taxi drivers are not going out of business anytime soon. Thank you. People can go to your website at Gabby.com to check out information. They can send you an email to Peter@Gabby.com if they want to get a tour of New York City next time they're there. Thank you very much, sir, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Take care.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you, and of course, an idiot of the day coming your way. A man has successfully cooked a pork roast in a car on a scorching hot day in Australia. Stu Pengelly placed the slab of pork in a baking tin on the car's seat of his red Datsun Sunny in Perth, Western Australia, for around 10 hours. It worked a treat, he said in a Facebook post with pictures of the cooked meat cut into slices to demonstrate its doneness. Pengelly also gave the temperature as it increased throughout the day, culminating in a staggering 81 degrees Celsius inside temperature. That's about 177.8 degrees Fahrenheit. That was at 1 p.m. Other social media users responded to the post with humorous comments asking for an invite to the next roast and relating their own experiences cooking in a heat wave. But Pengelly's post also contained some serious advice, warning people not to leave their children or dogs in a vehicle in the heat. Do not leave anyone or anything precious to you in a hot car, not for a minute, he wrote. When reached for comment, Pengelly said he next wants to try cooking roast beef in the Datsun. A quiche would cook in 2 hours, I reckon, he said. Wow, I'm guessing that there is no amount of air freshener that can help with the aroma on the inside of that Datsun. That pine tree hanging on the rearview mirror isn't gonna cut it. A Georgia mother shared an X-ray photo showing a new location for the Apple AirPod her son received for Christmas, his stomach. Kiara Stroud said her 7-year-old son received a new set of AirPods, that's the wireless Bluetooth earbuds, as a Christmas gift, and he ended up in the emergency room when he told her he had accidentally swallowed one. The boy told his mother he had been holding the AirPod in his mouth when he swallowed. An X-ray image taken at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta and Eagleston showed the device inside the boy's stomach. Stroud said the doctors decided to leave the AirPod where it was and told her it will pass through his body naturally. The mother said her son will be using wired headsets until he gets a little older. Yes, because if he swallows the wired headsets, you can still pull them back out by the cord. Yeah. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Colorado man made it very easy for law enforcement officials to earn their paychecks after allegedly robbing a bank while wearing a shirt with his name on it. According to police, John David Martinez went into a Wells Fargo branch in Denver wearing a personalized polo shirt bearing his name. The suspect approached the teller and said, "This is a robbery. Give me the money." To make it even easier for police, the suspect also allegedly drove his own Honda to the bank, so investigators were able to use the license plate to track down Martinez. Officers showed his DMV photo to a bank employee. "That's him. He's the one who robbed the bank this morning," an employee said. After an investigation that took all of 5 hours, Martinez was arrested. While he was in custody, Martinez reportedly said that he told his wife he had borrowed the money and didn't tell her that he had robbed the bank. The 68-year-old was booked into jail in Denver on investigation of felony robbery involving $20,000 or more. Now, why, oh why, would you rob a bank while wearing a shirt with your name on it? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0544. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0544. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.